From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall. Fishermen suffered a big loss on Tuesday with the defeat of Ballot Measure 1. The price of salmon permits are down, so too are the prices for halibut quotas. And Governor Bill Walker demands Canada protects Alaska's fish from across-the-border mines. And finally, it's not easy to be a fisherman's wife, but there are benefits. All that and more coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
Following months of intense debate and millions of dollars in campaign spending, Alaska voters defeated Ballot Measure 1 by a wide margin. Commonly known as the Stand for Salmon Initiative, the measure was aimed at increasing protections for Alaska's most iconic fish. It would have significantly toughened the environmental permitting process for mines, dams, and oil developments in salmon habitat. The initiative faced strong resistance from the resource industry, Alaska Native corporations, unions, and other groups. Opponents said it would hinder development in the state. Stand for Alaska, the campaign against the initiative, raised over $12 million, far outstripping the initiative's supporters, who raised over $2 million. Stand for Alaska campaign manager Katie Capozzi said she wasn't surprised by the election's result and acknowledged that fundraising helped their cause.
Of course, money is always helpful, and the companies that contributed and the people who were part of the coalition, they have the most to lose if the ballot measure would have passed. So they contributed money, and the good news is they get to continue on with a little bit more certainty.
Shortly after the polls closed on Tuesday, Ballot Measure 1 sponsor Stephanie Quinn Davidson said she felt the campaign had changed the conversation about salmon in Alaska, no matter what happened.
It's clear that Alaskans want stronger protections for salmon, but people have different opinions on how we go about doing that. And I'm confident that if this doesn't pass, that we have folks in the legislature who want to work on a bill that is going to get moved forward.
But Ballot Measure 1 supporters could face an uphill battle approaching the incoming governor about the issue. Republican Mike Dunleavy came out strongly against the initiative during his campaign.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska fishermen and their families. amc@amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
Now let's turn to prices. Salmon permit interest is sluggish in all but two regions, and prices for halibut quota shares has plummeted. Alaska Fish Radio's Lainey Welch has details.
An off-kilter salmon season has added to dampened enthusiasm in the permit market that's lasted all year.
All of these salmon fisheries around the Gulf of Alaska, the gillnet and the seine permit, they had a lousy year. We see that in the lackluster permit market for anything here in the Gulf.
Doug Bowen runs Alaska Boats and Permits at Homer. Further west, Bristol Bay, with its back-to-back record breakers, is one exception.
The notable exception would be Bristol Bay, where we see those prices continue to creep upward. They're right at $165 now, and they were probably around $140, $145 before the season.
Bowen says more fishermen in regions of repeated poor salmon runs are eyeing Bristol Bay. He has nearly 30 listings of drift permit holders who want to bail out of Cook Inlet.
Folks are wanting to move out of the inlet, which had another terrible year, and go to Bristol Bay and move from southeast and go to Bristol Bay.
Salmon drift permits for Area M on the Alaska Peninsula also are increasing in value after several years of good fishing.
We recently sold one for $175, which is actually about $10,000 more than what the bay permits are selling for.
Bristol Bay permit values are likely to increase, Bowen predicts. A lot is riding on the 2019 sockeye run and catch forecasts that will be out this month. Higher salmon prices should show a big boost in the value of this year's catch. Those numbers will be out any day. But Bowen says it won't make up for the shortfall in fish.
It's a matter of price and production. You have to have a decent fishery. If you're limited in how much you're able to harvest, that great price is not going to save the day.
High prices for halibut quota shares that 1 year ago were in the nosebleed area have now taken a nosedive.
Some negative news about the recruitment into the fishery and some more negative news about lower ex-vessel prices. That was enough to turn that IFQ market downward.
Doug Bowen is head of Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer. Quota shares in Area 2C, Southeast Alaska, that had topped $70 a pound are now 20 to 25% less. For the Central Gulf, Area 3A, halibut shares have dropped 30 to 40%. The value for halibut quota in the Western Gulf, Area 3B, is down by 50%. Last year's summer surveys showed a lack of young halibut recruiting into the fishery, and managers pushed for drastic cuts to protect the stocks. Last fall, halibut prices also dropped by $2 a pound at the docks. Another whammy came from increased sales of cheaper Atlantic halibut from eastern Canada.
It definitely put a dampener on the market for IFQs, and that lack of confidence in the resource and concerns about ex-vessel prices were well-founded there at the opener this year.
For this year, halibut managers only took half of the cuts their biologists recommended, and Bowen says that doesn't bode well for 2019.
Are they going to come back and want to cut the catch limits again? Yeah, there are some stiff headwinds here with the halibut IFQ market for sure.
The halibut fishery closes on November 7th. The industry will get its first look at potential catches for next year at the International Pacific Halibut Commission meeting set for November 27 and 28 in Seattle.
That was Alaska Fish Radio's Lainey Welch. The Pacific Halibut Fishery closed on Wednesday, November 7th.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Governor Bill Walker is using his final weeks in office to urge his Canadian counterpart in British Columbia to toughen regulations on mines that transboundary watersheds. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, it's a position fisheries advocates have been pushing for.
A mine can't legally operate in Alaska unless the owner makes financial assurances it can pay for remediation. Basically, that's cleaning things up to a point that satisfies regulators.
Here in Alaska, we require that mines put up a full reclamation bond that shows that a mine can clean up its mess, and that is not required in British Columbia.
Heather Hardcastle is with Salmon Beyond Borders, a group that campaigns against transboundary mine pollution. Her group has been urging Alaska's governor to demand the same from British Columbia. On Wednesday, she got her wish after Governor Walker penned a two-page letter to his counterpart demanding financial assurances.
This letter, in multiple paragraphs, mentions it multiple times, so it makes it very clear that financial assurances are a priority for Alaska.
Ephraim Froelich is the governor's fisheries advisor. He said recent contacts between the Walker administration and BC's Minister for Mines made it apparent the province wasn't enthusiastic about adding that requirement.
And so that it made it very clear the governor had to make Alaska's position crystal clear for the other side.
Salmon advocates like Hardcastle applaud the new position.
It's much more forceful in tone than previous letters, and I think it perfectly encapsulates the frustration that all of us are feeling right now with British Columbia and Canada.
The frustration is also felt by some in the Walker administration. That's because there's precedent for mine operators in BC going bankrupt and walking away. Just upstream from Taku Inlet near Juneau, the former Tulsiquit Chief Mine across the border has been leaching acid runoff for decades. The Taku River is an important salmon fishery in Southeast. Meanwhile, there's a booming mining sector in BC with additional metals mines being proposed just over the border.
We're not going to be able to have confidence in British Columbia's reclamation abilities of these mines that they are permitting at a pretty high rate if we do not see Tulsqua Chief be remediated and be cleaned up and properly dealt with.
The Walker administration's days are numbered. Froelich said the letter states Alaska's position clearly for whoever occupies the governor's mansion next month.
We would hope that whatever administration comes in next takes a strong stance.
The BC Premier's office referred questions to the Ministry of Mines, which didn't respond by deadline. Calls to the Mining Association of British Columbia weren't returned. Walker's letter comes at a time that BC is reviewing its mine reclamation laws. Public comment is accepted through November 8th. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Alaska's fishermen get a lot of attention, and rightly so. They risk their lives to catch fish. But what about the folks left back home? It's not easy being a fisherman's wife.
Kind of both the same. I like my alone time when he's gone, and I also get lonely when he's gone. So kind of, you know, it's a double-edged sword. Time away is always hard.
It's hard being a single parent all the time, and you never know when they're coming home. And when they come home, they still have boat work, kind of just sharing them all the time with the boat.
It's always hard to adjust to them being gone and then getting back, because as soon as you get adjusted to them being gone, then they get back. And then you have to adjust to them being back, and then they leave again, and then you have to adjust again. So it's a constant adjustment.
But the most difficult thing was having to make those critical decisions and also just the physical part of raising a family all by yourself, just the basic everyday things. I'd have to say that was the hardest part, raising a family.
However, there are benefits to being a fisherman's wife.
You know, it's always nice when they leave and it's always nice when they come home, so I think it's kind of the best of both worlds.
Enjoy that he's out providing for our family and he's having fun and he loves what he does.
One of the best things is you always have fresh seafood that never gets old.
He's an outdoorsman, I think a hard worker, and I always wanted a hard worker, and I got one.
I've been a fisherman's wife for probably 35 years. I mean, had I had a husband that was home from 8 to 5, I would have never been able to become as independent as I am. Just be able to develop my own person. That was, I think, my favorite part of being married to a fisherman, being able to have that time.
You know what's going on in the industry, and so you know what's going on around town with different fisheries. So there's usually an endless supply of interesting stories you get to hear.
Fishermen's wives in Kodiak talking about what it's like to be holding down the home front while the fisherman is away.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960, or online at alaskaboat.com.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Elizabeth Harbaugh with Alaska's Energy Desk, Jacob Resnick with Coast Alaska, and from Lainey Welch at Alaska Fish Radio. Thanks to everyone who helped put this program together, and a big thank you to our fishermen and their wives who hold down the home front while the fishermen are out. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Wall.